cannot do without. We cannot escape that. It's something that we'll always have to deal with, whether you're a Christian or not, but especially as a Christian. So let me say ahead of time a couple of things. This is not about being a Republican or a Democrat. This is not about one party being better than the other. I don't even know that I could make a case for that always being true. This is not convincing you that you have to be active or that you can't be active or that you should vote a particular way. This is about how we about learning how to maintain a godlike character when government doesn't seem to be favorable, when your candidate doesn't win, or when things don't go your way, when a decision's made that you don't like. How do we maintain a godlike character? That's what this is about. How do we get along with others when we don't agree? That's something that's going to be important as well. We're even going to have to talk about finding a balance. As citizens, we have rights, but God also says there is such thing as subjection. And so we've got to kind of wade through all of that. But we understand, I think, in general, government is a very good thing. I don't want to live without government because government provides law and order, and I like there being law and order. I like feeling safe. And so just for that reason alone, I like the idea that there is a government. I don't necessarily always enjoy paying taxes, but I certainly understand what good they do. I came here tonight on paved roads and well-lit streets, and there's just a lot that government provides. I'd never be able to have those things on our own. And so I think we understand that government is a good thing within itself. Romans chapter 13 even tells us, the text that was just read, that government gets its origin, it gets its authority from God. And so I think we understand that government not only exists, but it has the right from God to rule in the affairs of men. And so government's good, right? The problem is, what happens when government starts meddling? What happens when the government starts getting a little bit unfair? Maybe the taxes are too high. Or maybe they're taxing things that in our opinion they shouldn't do. Or maybe they start restricting our freedoms too much. Now let's make this very real, very today thing. Think about the mask that we're wearing. There have been some real outrages because some people think the government has overstepped their bounds. Now there's an invasion of my rights. And you guys have seen it. There has been some real outrage because government is overstepping. There are some infringements. And so we get upset sometimes if our freedoms are restricted. But maybe more than even what we would just call unfairness, we see a lot of immorality. We're living in a time where laws seem to favor the immoral over the moral. The restrictions are not just some violation of a personal preference. The restrictions now kind of even get into the religious realm. All of us have seen this. All of us know where maybe there's some talk about, well, if churches keep speaking out against things like homosexuality or gender issues, then they're going to lose their tax privileges. Or we've all probably heard of these businesses where you have a business owner who, you know, they have some religious convictions and they're told you'll either do this or there are going to be consequences. And so those are very real things. And you and I today have to live with the fallout of government and what it does and how people respond. And unfortunately right now in our country, there's a lot of bickering, there's violence, there's rioting, there are conspiracy theories. And you know what all of that tends to do? It can add panic, it can add worry, anxiety, and those things can really define us. They could maybe even lead us to be the ones who are outraged, or maybe the ones who are rebelling, or at the very least, we kind of lose control of our emotions, we lose control of our tongues, and we become very vocal about our disdain for government leaders or that. And you know, if we paid attention to Romans chapter 13, it's not hard to see there are some real problems if we kind of lose control. If you have your Bibles there to Romans 13, just lay your eyes on the text again. If I'm angry at the government, or I might be angry at the government, yet what it says is I still have to live in subjection to the government even if I'm angry, even if I don't like it. And if I get out of line with the government, I'm out of line with God. And it says I have to pay taxes. And you notice it didn't say pay the ones you agree with. Pay what you think is fair. It just says pay taxes. So that doesn't leave us a lot of wiggle room there. It says that government is for our good. And we've got a question about that in just a minute. It says I owe them honor. And Jim, I would just say when we read Romans 13 and we observe some of the things that we're observing today, it seems as if some of this is a little bit hard to stomach, or at the very least, it's hard to kind of wrap our minds around it.
There's no doubt about it. You know, it's very, very difficult to be able to honor people who are not honorable people. And you see this in government all the time, unfortunately. There are people who are in government that are elected to service, but when they are elected, they either were bad going in, or they have shown themselves to be immoral, or whatever you want to, however you want to describe them. But at the same time, we think about that. It's very difficult to be able to honor them as people, but we can actually honor the office that they hold. And I think that's two different things. You know, when a man is elected to be president, be whatever stripe, Republican, Democrat, or independent, there is a certain honor that that person deserves because they are the president. We honor the actual office of the president. I dare say that if we were in any public gathering, and maybe the worst of all political candidates came in, particularly if it was someone as high as a presidential candidate or a senator candidate, everybody said, someone said, will everybody please stand? I suspect all of us would do that because, again, there is a respect that's due whatever office that these people hold.
Yeah, that's right. So let's jump into some of these questions. And I really appreciate you sitting up here with me answering these questions, because we may have to give some answers that are a little unpopular. We may have to give I don't know as an answer a lot. And when I say I don't know, I feel a lot better about it when I ask you and you say, well, I don't know either.
Oh, good. That works.
But maybe what we need to admit is that you and I don't have special revelation. You and I don't have more to work with than anybody else. And so sometimes all we know to say is here's what we know, and there's just not much else to be said, right?
And let me remind all of us who are studying both here and maybe at home or in the parking lot that sometimes there is a conflict between what the government would ask us to do and what God teaches us to do. And I think then we've got to turn to a passage like Acts 5:29 that tells us we must obey God rather than men. And that's what we have to do. And by the way, I know it's hypothetical right now to think it, but I think this is a very real possibility. It's not far-fetched to say that there's going to come a time when if you speak out against the LGBTQ community, which we do quite often, if anybody wants to know who's listening to this, that may be considered as hate speech. And it's not, because we love the souls of even those who are involved in that. We just want to love them so much that we can talk them out of it and talk them into a better way of life, a Christ-like way of life. But there sometimes does come that rub between what God wants us to do and what civil government tells us to do. Then we got a problem. And we've got things like that taking place, particularly out in California, because some of you may know the evangelist John MacArthur. He's a denominationalist, and I can't remember just exactly what stripe. But, you know, they were being charged not to meet, and they have gone ahead and they've met in defiance of the California governor, and it is in courts now. It'll probably go all the way to the Supreme Court before it's over with. But, you know, there are some questions that Jesus settled 2,000 years ago, so that whatever rules the government makes, we must make sure we do what God says.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's jump into these questions. And the first question really just relates to leaders today. And so just think about in our country today, in America today, we've got leaders who are governing. They're lawmakers, they're law enforcers, and some of them are pro-life, big advocates of abortion, something that we would just be dead set against.
That's the pro-choice.
I'm sorry, pro-choice. Thank you. It's good that you're here. Yeah. Pro-choice. There are some who promote same-sex marriage. I think in one of the recent elections in Arizona, there was an electee who is transgender, and you just imagine that may be something that they're going to push. We talked earlier about there are some states where hard drugs are actually being legalized, and you think about who in the world in leadership is pushing for things like that. Now, we tend to view everything in American eyes, and that's rightfully so. We live in America. That's the biggest effect on us. But what seems even worse, when we're thinking about this idea of leaders being in place, it's one thing to have a leader who's okay with homosexuality or legalizing drugs. But what about some of these world rulers in the past who have committed mass genocide? About some of these who have made Christianity illegal, where if you proclaim to be a Christian, maybe if you're even caught with the Bible, that's just the end of life. And so we're not just thinking about American leaders, we're thinking about leaders all times and all places where some really terrible things have happened. And even when we open up our Bibles, we read about Pharaoh and his dealings there in Egypt. He was regarded as a god, thought of himself as a god. And we understand the cruel treatment that he did. And when he felt threatened by Israel, he said, well, let's just take all their babies and kill them. And so that's the mindset of a leader in the past. Think about Nebuchadnezzar. He took God's people. He destroyed Jerusalem. 2 Kings chapter 25 is most... maybe despicable thing that I can think about where King Zedekiah, they come in and they take him and he's got two sons and they kill his two sons in front of him and then they gouge his eyes out. The very last thing that King Hezekiah saw or Zedekiah saw was his sons being cruelly treated. That's just to think that was a world leader. And then think about Pilate, not necessarily a world leader at that time, but clearly found Jesus guilty of nothing, certainly didn't find him worthy of anything of death, yet he consented and gave the people what they wanted. And so when we think about all of the leaders that have been in those positions, either now or in the past, and some of the things that they stand for, Jim, we can't help but wonder, how can God allow a leader in a position like that who is so contrary to his will? Now, Romans chapter 13, verse 1 says, there is no authority except from God, and those which are established by God, those which exist are established by God. Now, he may not be talking about an individual leader. I don't necessarily think that it's limited to that. But we recognize throughout history, God has brought some. Pharaoh, I think. There are some texts that indicate God brought Pharaoh into leadership. God brought Nebuchadnezzar into leadership. So, how can God allow a leader that is so contrary to his will?
Well, let me answer maybe an implied question first, okay? Let's look at Romans chapter 13 through these eyes. These people, this book is written to citizens of the city of Rome, okay? And not only that, but the man who's on the throne is maybe one of the most wicked despots that the first century or maybe any century has ever known. We're talking about Nero here. And so he is a very, very wicked person. And here in this, you've got him over the Roman Empire, and you have got not only him over the Roman Empire, but Christians being commanded to be in subjection to the governing authorities and under those kinds of circumstances. And that's really difficult for somebody that is at home wanting to worship with his family or with his community of friends, knowing that it could be under the threat of his life for him to do that. How could God allow a leader such as Nero to occupy the throne? I'm going to answer that with a very decided and emphatic, I don't know. I don't know. I do know that over history, God has raised wicked men in order to be able to accomplish his purpose. We mentioned Nebuchadnezzar just a few moments ago. I have no doubt but what Nebuchadnezzar was brought to the throne. In fact, Daniel 5 tells us that that's exactly what happened, that God brought him to the throne in order to bring about his purposes because Judah had gone so far into wickedness that God said he was going to destroy them. We're going to talk a little bit more about Habakkuk a little bit later on. Habakkuk wondered how God could use a nation more wicked than Judah to destroy them.
Right.
Well, the truth of the matter is God uses wicked people in order to bring about his purposes. That's the only answer I have.
Right, and I don't know that we could have any other answer unless it would just be pure speculation, and that's not necessarily valuable all the time. But you think about all of these men that we just mentioned, God used Pharaoh. Pharaoh, the hardness of his heart. You recognize that God used him in such a way with his people. And then, of course, Nebuchadnezzar. And then Pilate, such a despicable person. But that was in God's plan. That helped facilitate God's plan, at least. And so I think we do have a long history of evil leaders, some of them put specifically in place by God. And the one thing that we do know is that God used them to accomplish some purpose. And so if we have evil leaders today, it's quite possible that's the same thing happening. Maybe there's another reason, but if there is, we just wouldn't know it, right?
Yes, I had a lesson several months ago. Now, it was within 2019, and I raised the question about national sin and national punishment if America fell. And you think about the many millions now of unborn children that have been aborted. You know, we would deserve what we get. Whatever leader that comes into this country, our country as a whole deserves it. We have hoped and we have prayed that there would be enough righteous people. You know, righteousness preserves a nation. Sin is a disgrace to any people. We have helped that there are enough righteous people in the world where this nation has been preserved. But, you know, at some point in time, it may not be that way. Yeah. And at some point in time, God may say, look, this United States of America experiment is going to come to a halt because it didn't work.
That's right. All right, let's move on to another question. And by the way, those of you who submitted questions, I appreciate that. It lets me know you're thinking about these things and you've got some interest in it. I may have taken some questions and kind of simplified them or even combined them with another question. So, but that being said, if we don't answer your question exactly the way that you thought we would, then see Jim on Monday about that. Verse 3 says that we will have praise from God if we do good. And it seems to say you'll have praise from the government. Does anybody see a little bit of problem with that? I mean, can we just observe that there are wicked people who go unpunished and there are innocent people who sometimes seemingly get punished? And so we've got a statement here that says one thing, but our observation is not necessarily true. What would we make of that?
You know, the civil government was God's second great institution. His first great institution was the home. The second great institution was civil government, civilization, cities being governed by people. And the reason that governance is there is so that there might be some semblance of order in the midst of a chaotic world. Mm-hmm. And so there have to be laws made, and there have to be enforcement of those laws. And when we come to Romans chapter 13, and we're looking particularly at Nero being the particular emperor, what we see here is that when government functions as God designed it, then wicked men are punished and evil men are praised. They are exalted. But, you know, there's a proverb that we studied, and I can't remember exactly where it is right now, that talked about when a man is righteous, even his enemies will praise him. Mm-hmm. Well, that happens, yes. Maybe the general rule. It is the general rule. But when people, nations are wicked, sometimes things get skewed.
Yeah.
And when they're doing things that God does not want them to do, when they have ignored God's righteous law, in fact, as we studied in Proverbs, they don't even understand it. They don't get it, you know. And so because they don't get it, then good becomes evil and evil becomes good, you know, as the way it was in Judah,
right,
where they pronounced, and when that happens, it's the righteous people that suffer and the wicked people are praised. And I would even go on record as saying I believe that's in some ways the way it is in our country today. Not always, maybe not most of the time, but I think we can see how that in many cases there are wicked people who are being allowed to continue in their wickedness while righteous people sometimes are considered deplorables. They're considered as, you know, less than, you know, good citizens because we do believe in God and we believe God has a law. And so we're just kind of on edge, maybe I think most people are, waiting for the time to come in which Christianity will no longer be tolerated. Is that possible? Hopefully not within our lifetime, but I wouldn't take bets on it if I were a betting man.
Yes, sir. All right. So Paul is given the ideal picture, but we understand that men don't always operate according to God's ideal plan. Even in our own lives, God gives us a picture of what husbands are supposed to look like. And I won't incriminate you, but I'll say I've probably been less than ideal at some point, right? And all of us recognize, well, here's the ideal. Here's what God says about it, but we don't always live up to that, and I don't think government is any exception to it. Paul is stating this is ideal, that this will happen in the governments of man, but we recognize that sometimes that just does not happen. All right, Jim, I think you've kind of already answered this question, but there was one instance that stood out to me somewhat recently when we're thinking about honoring. And again, that's what Romans 13 says. It says to honor, and you're talking about a Nero in our minds. How in the world could we honor that person? I think about more modern day, back in New York, January 2019, the Reproductive Health Act was passed. And if you may remember that, but it expanded abortion rights essentially. It legalized abortion really up until the point of birth. And there's some talk that even in the moments after birth, that abortion would be legal. And I just have burned in my mind the scene of the governor signing that into law, and there were people standing around celebrating and applauding this despicable thing that just got signed into law. He even made certain that the prominent landmarks in the city be lit up pink. A celebration of something so despicable. And so the question comes, how in the world can we honor that person or those people?
I will honor his position when he comes into my life, but I will do everything I can, everything within my power, to say that those kinds of things are just as sinful and wrong, even to say that one of these days, people who do these things will one day stand before Almighty God in judgment. That's all I know what to say.
And that's really where our confidence lies.
That's
like, I can't control what happens, but I know God is definitely seeing what happens. All right, we've got to move through these a little bit quicker. How do we find balance between exercising our rights as citizens and this submitting to the government? And that's a thing, right? That's a big thing. We've got rights as citizens, but we also have this command from God. And I would just say that, you know, we can't just take the extreme view of do nothing at all. I think God allows us to have input. God allows us to vote, or the government allows us to vote. And so, you know, to say we'll do absolutely nothing, I think that would be an extreme view. But we also can't go out and riot in the streets and burn buildings just to draw attention to our cause either. So those are the extremes. But I think we need to recognize, just because I'm not rioting in the street and burning down buildings and smashing police car windows, just because we're not doing that doesn't mean that we may not be doing some damage. Even as Christians, maybe we ruin our influence with others. Maybe we even cause a little bit of strife in the church because I'm so opinionated about my views on politics versus somebody else's. You know, here's the thing. We've got rights as Christians. But in no way can we ever, I'm sorry, rights as citizens, but in no way can we ever let that become a conflict with who we are first. And I think sometimes we fail to recognize that we're Christians first, then Americans. We're not Americans, then Christians.
And I think we have to be very careful how we even exercise whatever rights this government may afford us. Let me say before I even look at that further, that is that this was not in the United States of America where these were written. I want to remind you of that. They had no rights other than what Rome gave them. That was the thing. They didn't have the right to vote a Caesar out of office if they didn't like him. Usually what happened, if he didn't like, somebody came along with a knife in their back, and put a knife in their back.
Right.
Or poisoned them or something of that nature. But obviously that in itself would have been wrong for a Christian to get involved in. But the truth of the matter is that we have the responsibility to submit to our civil government. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's the responsibility that we have. Does our government give us the right and the privilege to be able to protest? Yes, but we've got to be very careful, even about how we do that, because we've got to think about our influence with other people. I have on social media, and we may be jumping ahead a little bit too much here, but on social media, I have seen people who claim to be New Testament Christians say things and get into squabbles, and there have been reputations that have been severely tarnished over their views on political things. Now, we do need to remember, those of you who are interested in church history especially, that back in the 1930s and 40s, that there was almost a division over the pacifism question, almost a division over that. And so this has been something that has been around. It's been something that we have discussed. And there's room for disagreement among Christians with regard to these things. But at the end of the day, we've got to behave like Christians, even when we're exercising our right, especially when we're talking with one another.
Yeah. There are a lot more important battles to engage in than my rights as a citizen. And you brought it up, but sometimes we look on social media and it becomes pretty clear that there are a lot of Christians who are a whole lot more worried about political things than they are Christ-like things. And that's sad, but I think that is true. People are, you know, we can use our platform for whatever we want to. I think telling people about Jesus is a really good place to start, and that's a really good thing to do. And unfortunately, I don't see that used as much as I do the political squabbles that you mentioned.
Let me give another illustration. I've not made it just a publicly known thing. I think everybody here knows it. I believe in the right of self-protection. Okay? I don't put that out on Facebook. I don't spend a lot of time even talking about it because I don't want to damage my ability to be able to reach someone who might view that differently.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with an elderly gentleman from Birmingham about this last night. We have to be careful how we present ourselves before people because we've got to keep, as I said this morning, we've got to keep the main thing, and that's reaching people for Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we've got a closing thought on that if we ever get to that. But maybe we understand that, yes, we do have rights as citizens. And I want to be able to exercise those rights. And I think God would be okay with us exercising those rights. Because we do have some biblical insight to this. And apologies, we've just got to talk about things we're assuming they know a little something about. But you may want to dig into these a little bit deeper. But can you remember Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego taken from their home? They're taken into Babylonian captivity. And the first thing, they're going to be put into this king's program. And they were going to be forced to do something that they didn't want to do. They were going to have to eat the king's meat. Daniel speaks up. And Daniel just kind of very politely says, is there a different way that we can do this? And I think Daniel's trying to find a compromise there. He's working with an official, but he's kind of engaging. Is there a better way? And then, of course, there's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we remember this idol is put up. And you fall down and you worship it when you hear the music playing. Or else we're going to throw you into the fiery furnace. And that story is famous. Why? Because they didn't do it. Now, we don't see a mass protest there, but we do see them maintain their allegiance to God. They seem to just quietly honor God, and then when they were called out, they maintained that. And so I think I've heard it described as respectful resistance is maybe that. But then think about New Testament times. Can you remember in Acts chapter 16? Acts chapter 16, Paul is in Philippi, and Paul had been arrested for his preaching of the gospel. And remember, they had beaten Paul, and then they were going to just release Paul. I want you to notice in chapter 16, verse 35, they the next day were just going to release Paul. The jailer reported, verse 36, these words to Paul, saying, "The chief magistrates have sent to release you. Therefore, come out and now go in peace." But verse 37, Paul said to them, "They've beaten us in public without trial, men who are Romans and have thrown us into prison. Now they're sending us away secretly. No, indeed, but let them come themselves and bring us out." Do you hear something in Paul here? Where Paul is challenging the authorities, where they've beaten Paul, now they're going to let him go. And Paul says, "No, wait a minute, I've got rights and you have violated my rights as a citizen. And I'm not going to let that go unnoticed." Now, I think what Paul is doing is he's not necessarily protecting himself. I think Paul is protecting those Christians that are going to be left behind in Philippi, letting him know or letting the authorities know that you've gone out of bounds here. There's probably more to be said about that. But I think Paul's cause is pretty noble. Paul was not concerned that they had just robbed him of a personal right. Paul, I think, has the kingdom in mind. And then there's Acts chapter 22, where Paul was going to be scourged. And he said, "Wait a minute, I'm a Roman citizen. So we see Paul exercising his government-given rights on more than one occasion. So I'd be hard-pressed to say that we can't stand up for our rights because I see Paul do that. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say there's a difference between standing up for our rights and rebelling against a government.
Well, that's completely true, yes.
Yeah, that's the thing that we need to remember. That, you know, to lead a rebellion against government would be something that would be directly in opposition to what you read here. Standing up for your rights, exercising your rights is one thing. Rebellion is something else.
Yeah, so to answer the question, is there some balance? Is there a possibility a Christian can stand up for his government-given rights and still be in subjection, still be obedient to God? I say the answer is yes, but we do have to be careful. I think we need to question what our motive is and certainly never lose sight of kingdom priorities, because there's not a textbook answer as to how much a Christian can engage in government and still be okay. All we have are these examples. So that's it. All right, we got another one here. This one is, I don't know that I have a popular answer for this question. Owning firearms is a Second Amendment right. And so what if legislation effectively makes a gun owner a felon? The question is, what do we do? Can we hold on to our guns or we have to give them up? And I think both you and I agree, we'd have to give them up. As much as we want to hang on to them and as much value as we may see, we'd have to give them up. And the reason I say that is that the only way we could justify rebelling against the law would be if it made us in conflict with God. And I know there are a lot of proud gun owners, but you can't make a real good argument that makes you right or wrong with God, right?
That's correct. Let me kind of jump just a little bit here and talk. Well, I believe this is right. Mm-hmm. I believe there's another question that is raised that I know I haven't thought through thoroughly, and I think it needs to be thought through thoroughly. And that is the difference between what is codified law, that which is written, and that which is governed by people.
Yeah.
Are we submitting to people, or are we submitting to codified law?
Yeah, and let me just go ahead and just put that up there, okay. jumping ahead, because you mentioned this, sometimes a difference between subjecting yourself to the codified laws and the governing people, and you give some illustrations.
Yeah.
So let me let you just go here.
Okay, just briefly, let's think about antiquated laws for just a moment. There's a law in the books in Florence that's still there. That where if a woman drives, a man can only allow her to drive if he's walking in front of the car waving a red flag. I do believe that law is still there. I know in New England there have been laws, maybe that needs to be there. I do know that there are laws in New England states that would forbid someone walking by and spitting on the streets. I don't know when that has last been enforced. I think you can see that. So these things are so old that people have forgotten about them and nobody ever enforces them. And so the question is, do you obey those who actually rule and say that's okay, or do you obey the antiquated law? And then that actually plays out with regard to immigration. Now, and this really touches us here at South Cullman, because several years ago now, we had a woman here who was a citizen of Mexico. She'd been here, I guess, most of her life with her dad as a preacher. And then after he went back to Mexico, she still had, I think, about 10 years that she could stay here. And in her final year, as her green card was about to lapse, this was a really hot-button issue, particularly here in Alabama, and she decided that it would be best, ask me and others about it, it would be best for her to go back. You know, throughout all of this, there was never any kind of government will from the governing authorities to ever deport someone like her. It would never, and even till this day, never be considered something that should be done. But you know, here she was. She was thinking about codified law. So was I, and submitting to that law because you know, laws are laws, and they're on the paper. So which do you follow? What do you do? It's kind of interesting that the New Testament gives emphasis to submitting to the people who rule over you. That's where the New Testament emphasis is. I don't know where that goes. I don't know what that leads to. All I'm saying is that there needs to be more thorough discussion of that question, because there are obviously some conflicts sometimes between what the governing authorities tell us to do and what is allowed, or what is in written law. And that plays into this gun control thing too, because the Second Amendment says what the Second Amendment says. And then someone comes along and say, oh no, you've got a conflict between what people say and what the law is. And so which do you follow? I know this, you better make sure your motivation is right, you better make sure your heart is right, and you better make sure who you are, that you're a Christian, and you better act that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think what you're pointing out is that, especially the firearm question and some of the other questions that you're raising, these are deeper questions than a couple of word answers, and would take a lot. We've got one more question. This one kind of came in late, and it was a real lengthy question. But Jim, let me just kind of mention this to you. He talks about our country was founded significantly on religious freedoms. Talks about the Crusades, and there are some things that without those happening, most of the world may even entirely be Muslim at this point. Is there any point where you feel that Christians should stand up in a way that comes to actual physical arms? And then kind of an extension of the question, maybe what kind of sense do we feel of obligation to maybe protect the generations to come? And I know that's a lot. This question will just touch the hem of the garment, maybe. But let me just say, if I can kind of summarize that, yes, there are some things that have happened throughout history that we look at and think, man, I'm really glad that happened, because it has brought me to a good place. It's brought our country to a good place. It's been good for Christianity. And so while we observe good things happened out of maybe rebellion, good things happened when people went outside of the law, I don't know that that would give me a good feeling about doing it today just because it's happened in the past. I think what we have to rely on is God. Whatever happens with Christianity does not necessarily depend on me rebelling or not. I think about those Christians that we read about in Revelation. They were oppressed physically. They were oppressed spiritually. And never do you get the inclination that what they needed to do was to overthrow the government and try to make a better future for Christians to come. The theme of Revelation is that God reigns and you be faithful even if it costs you your life. And so that's all I would really know to say about that. I want to leave a good environment for my children and my grandchildren to grow up in. I don't know that I see anything in the Bible that would tell me I need to get out of bounds with the government to ensure that.
I want to limit my comments and on this to this specific situation, because there are other questions that arise out of this that really, you know, take us a long way, and certainly we don't have time to cover them tonight. Let's just suppose the government installs laws that are against Christianity. The question is, do I have the right to join in a rebellion against this country, an armed rebellion against this country, in order to bring about a change? My answer to that is a flat no, because the Bible tells us that we must be in submission to the government. Now, what that means, though, is that I'm going to continue doing what God wants me to do, because Acts 5:29, I'm going to obey God rather than man. And then if that government chooses to persecute me, then I'm going to be in exactly the same position as first century Christians were.
Yeah.
And I'm going to submit to that persecution. I'll do my very best to hide in a cave or whatever I have to do to prevent it, take care of my family. But at the same time, if persecution comes as a result of government mandate, dictate, or whatever, then there's a submission that has to take place, and we just have to suck it up and deal with it.
I think you're right. All right, we mentioned, I call it Habakkuk. You say it differently. That's okay. We can agree to disagree on that and still be friends, right? But
maybe
the prophet Habakkuk, right?
Habakkuk,
thank you. See? The prophet.
Okay.
He observes what we're observing. God, how can this be? And God says, well, I'm about to overtake the evil. And he says, I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans, Babylon. And then Habakkuk starts scratching his head. God, how can that be? They're worse than we are. And God essentially says, just stand by and watch what's going to happen. But he gives him something encouraging. He says in Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 4, the righteous will live by faith. I think that is a survival. Hold on to God. Be loyal to God. Even when government, all this doesn't make sense, be loyal to God. That's the message that I think we need to keep. So let me fly through these final thoughts. Would we admit easily things could be worse? Absolutely. And I think government is sometimes underappreciated. I don't know how many countries in the world wouldn't swap with us right now, even though there may be some things going on that we don't like. I think it's possible our expectations for government are too high. The Bible tells us Satan is the ruler of this world. And so it ought not surprise me when Christianity is kind of always going to be at odds with the world. That's just really the way it's always been. And let me say this, being uncomfortable is a good thing. You talk about what if the government starts oppressing us? What if the government starts treating us like first century Christianity or first century Christians? You know what they really, really wanted to do? They really wanted to get to heaven. And I think sometimes we can be so comfortable and so complacent, we just lose all sight of that. So I think there's a good thing to be said there. And you brought this up. Think before you speak. Think before you post. If people were to just go look at your recent history on Facebook, what would they think about you? Would they think you're passionate about Jesus, or would they think you're passionate about politics? And that's not to say that you can't have an opinion, but we don't ever want to lose sight of what is the most important thing, regardless of what happens in this life. God will take care of us. The righteous will live by faith. That's what I'm leaving here confident in tonight.
Yes.
All right. This is not necessarily a sermon. It's not even actually a sermon, I guess. But it's not necessarily a lesson that would make you think about salvation, except for the fact that we are saying some really important things, that there is a God and He is in control, and one day we'll all answer to that God. And so, let me encourage anybody listening to this tonight who may not be right with God. Maybe you've never been right with God. Maybe you were a faithful follower of God in the past, but you've allowed life to just take you away from Him. The absolute best thing that you could do right now is get back on good terms with God. Maybe you need to confess some sins. Maybe you need to be baptized for the remission of sins. Maybe you just need to talk. Maybe you need prayers. Whatever it is, if there's anything separating you from God, let's get it out of the way. And if we can help you, we invite you to come to the front as we stand and sing.